as we get started, I'd like to begin with a question. Is there someone in your life that you're close to that doesn't come to church and you wish they would? Or doesn't have a relationship with God and you wish that they would? You know, and first question I'm gonna ask you is that if they don't come to church, have you invited them to church? And I'm sure you're like, well, duh, of course I invited them to church. So when they didn't come, just don't answer out loud, but when they didn't come, think about the reason that they gave you. Because people generally will give you a reason. Sometimes it'll be a polite reason. Oh, my schedule doesn't allow for it. Sometimes it'll be a different reason. It might be something more specific. But in the cases where you feel like you've been given an answer that's kind of, yeah, no, that's really the reason they're not coming. The thing I've been thinking a lot about this week is that if the reason they've given is something that we could fix, why aren't we fixing it? You know, like if there was a different structure that we could use, you know, separate from this one, we could do it a different time of the week, do it on a Thursday night at 6:30. Why aren't we doing that? You know, I think that it's very likely that, you know, if you've been in church for a lot of your life, or, you know, I was kind of in for a while, out for a long time, came back, you know, a little bit later, that we kind of get used to doing what we've always done. And I wonder that maybe as we live in a different time, that maybe we need to think about other ways of doing things. Because there's a very real possibility that there are people who would come if we did it differently. You know, have a service where the music was a little different. You know, maybe we made it a little shorter. Maybe we had kind of more chances to engage, right? All those sort of things. All things that are reasonable requests. And I just keep asking myself, why aren't we doing that? Now, there is the reality that for some folks, although they may give you a polite answer as to why they don't come, even if you did everything they asked you to do, they still wouldn't come. Right? And, you know, and part of that is that you know, some people just don't feel like there's any reason to be here. It's not really valuable, right? Like, they're not anti-church. It's like, well, if you want to go, that's great for you, but it's not really what I'm looking for. So what do we do there? I mean, I'd argue that it is our responsibility to be able to express the reason it's important to us, to be able to demonstrate that, right? Not to hound people, but to be able to begin a conversation and say why you actually care. And the answer is, the answer of, well, I've done it since I'm a kid and I don't know what else to do, is not going to be super convincing, right? That we have to realize that, you know, people are looking for value. You know, and one of the things that I think a lot about, and to be honest, I didn't think about it as much as I should until I had a recent conversation. You know, from my viewpoint, everyone is welcome here. Everyone is welcome here. No matter how you vote, right, no matter, you know, what's going on in your life, you are absolutely welcome here. But people probably don't realize that everyone is welcome here. And if we're facing an issue where people don't feel welcome here, then we really need to look at that. You know, because this is my, what I'm about to say is my anecdotal experience. I'm not saying that there's research behind this, but my anecdotal experience in talking with church people about this issue, that all the reasons that people do not come to church. Whenever I have that conversation, many of the church people kind of go, well, they're the problem. That if they would get their head on right, they'd be here. Or whatever reason. And the thing that occurs to me is that Jesus doesn't give us that kind of leeway. Jesus says that if you're one of my disciples, if you are someone who's put your faith in Jesus, Jesus puts it like this. And I'm going to kind of take an excerpt from something his disciple Matthew, right? One of the original apostles, one of the original 12. Right, as Jesus was kind of preparing to turn the whole ministry over to his followers, what he said to his followers was, therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. That verse is so central to Christianity, it actually has a name. What is it? Great Commission. Basically, Jesus is like, if you don't hear anything else I've said for the past 3 years, this is it. This is what it's about. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And notice all the action words in there. Go, baptize, teach. Jesus says is that it is our responsibility to take action that helps other people to come into a relationship with Him. So this week, as we're continuing our series, Connection Points, remember that what we're talking about in this series is relationships. And we've talked about a lot of different kinds of relationships, right? We started out with personal relationships. Let me think about the people who are close to you in your life, your relationship with yourself, your relationship with God. Last week, we talked about the responsibility we have for all those around us who are in need, that we should actually be in relationship with the people who are in need, that we are responsible. We are called by God to care for the people around us who need it. Well, what I want to talk about today is, what is our responsibility? What is our relationship with people who are in a very different place in their faith journey than we are? What are we supposed to be doing? Because the reality is that, you know, having spent, you know, much of my life in church, you know, I think about when I was a kid in church that my viewpoint was kind of like, well, there were church people and not church people, right? But the reality is that, you know, there are some people who are, you know, who are kind of just unchurched. They just haven't had it in their lives at all, right? There are lots of people who are seekers. In other words, that they're seeking some form of spirituality. Christianity is just kind of one of the choices. They're not quite sure where they should go, right? Then you kind of have new believers who have kind of said, you know, I think this Jesus thing is it, but they're really early in their journey and they need support as they go through that journey. And a big part of things now, our big experience for people now, is what we call deconstructing. Now, I went through this years ago. It just didn't have a cool name when I did it, right? But deconstructing is, and I'm going to just generalize, deconstructing is generally, you grew up in a particular faith tradition. And as a kid, you just kind of believed everything they told you. And as you grow up, you start going, yeah, I don't know if I buy all that. And it's a process of not just saying that, well, I don't believe this part, I'm going to throw it all out. Deconstructing is a thoughtful process of saying, I'm not sure, so I need to kind of reevaluate everything I've been taught. Because maybe the Jesus part is true, but maybe the other parts aren't true. You know, and I went through that process. Now, it took me a couple decades to get through my process. You know, but ultimately, well, when you do the exercise, when you do the work, at least in my experience, your faith becomes your own. You know, and so if someone's in a deconstructing process, it's so important that they have support and freedom to go through that process, but someone who's there, you know, as they hit questions, as they get stuck. So what is our responsibility in all of that? Now, interestingly, as we've gone through this series, we've been walking through the book of Ruth. Now, as I've mentioned before, you know, there are these kind of short narratives in the Old Testament that I tend to love, Ruth being one of those. And since we're kind of in our third week, I'm just going to summarize kind of really, really quickly. If you weren't here before, I'd encourage you to check out the earlier ones. But basically, this takes place about 3,000 years ago, so about 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. But it takes place in a city called Bethlehem, the same Bethlehem associated with Jesus' birth. And our two kind of main people in the narrative are Naomi and Ruth. Right? And Naomi is Ruth's mother-in-law. And they've actually had a really hard time, right? That they've both had their husbands die. And so they go through this very difficult process of living in the ancient world, and a woman on her own would have a very hard time surviving in the ancient world, just the nature of how things worked. So they're facing poverty. Right? And so what we found last week was that Ruth, being younger than her mother-in-law, and we get the sense that Naomi is either much older than Ruth or maybe has some sort of health issue. So Naomi can't really participate very much in kind of taking care of them. So Ruth does what she can do. Right, she heads out, and she goes to nearby farm fields, and her intent is to glean. In other words, the harvest has already gone through, and she's going to walk through kind of the picked-through field, just trying to find little bits of food, hoping that she can put together enough for her and Naomi to get through the next night so that she can go do the same thing again tomorrow. But what we found, right, was that she actually went to a particular field owned by a man named Boaz. Right, and Boaz was a man of standing. He was, by their standards, he was very well off. And one of the things we find is that Boaz is very kind. He's kind to Ruth, and he treats her well. And one of the things he does is he encourages her to not go glean from any other fields. Just keep coming to my fields. You'll be welcome here. You'll be safe if you come here. And that's kind of where we left it off last week. And what I'd like to do is that as we look at it, just a few verses this week, what we see in Boaz's treatment of Ruth is an incredible example for us in how we as the church should treat people who are in different places in their faith journey, right? Whether a person is new to faith, transitioning into faith, or returning to faith. Now, one of the things that I find kind of being an incredible parallel for Ruth, right, is that Ruth was searching. Now, what she was searching for was physical food, right? And what she was really hoping to do is kind of just get enough. And remember that Ruth is from another country, so she's now kind of a foreigner, right, an immigrant, now, you know, kind of picking through what's left in a field. So she's going to be incredibly uncomfortable. She's going to feel incredibly unwelcome. And you remember that Boaz did what he could to try to relieve that tension. But the thing that I'd like to encourage us with is that for someone who is uncertain about faith, kind of trying to figure the process out, walking into a church is a very foreign experience. It's a very, in many cases, uncomfortable experience. For many people, they can walk into a church and say, I'm not sure if I belong here. I'm not even sure if I'm welcome here. And a very really real thing we have to consider is someone could walk in and still find something that they were looking for, right? Maybe something in this awesome message that you hear. That's humor, just, you know, right? You're allowed to laugh at me. It's cool. It's kind of part of the job, right? So whether it might be something in the message, right? It might be something in the music, right? They could have an incredible sense of finding something they were looking for, but still feel so uncomfortable that they don't come back. That is a very real possibility. So we have to think about, well, what can we do about that? What's our responsibility in that? And one of the things we see that as Boaz interacts with Ruth, and he's treated her so well, he's been so kind to her, he said that you're safe here, you're welcome here, and we see something in what Ruth says back to him. So after he's kind of told her to always keep coming to the fields, this is a safe place for you, Ruth says this: May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants. Now, when she says by speaking kindly to one of your servants, that's an act of respect. She's kind of deferring to him, saying that I respect you. So people would refer to themselves as a servant, not meaning they're actually a servant to that person, but they're paying that person respect. But then she kind of says, well, you know, I thank you for being so kind to me, but honestly, I don't even have the standing of one of your servants. And servants didn't have very high standing, but the one thing they did have is they were supposed to be there. It was a place to belong. And she says, I didn't even have that. And what I find really interesting is that she says, but in spite of all this, you have put me at ease. Now, what do we know about Ruth's recent experiences in life? Well, her husband died. Her father-in-law died. Her and her mother-in-law were a long, long distance from anywhere they knew. It was kind of Moab, so it was Ruth's home country, but not Naomi's. They are two women alone making a long journey on foot that would have been incredibly dangerous. They make that journey. They are facing abject poverty. Ruth's only hope for this day was to pull together enough food to get through the night so she could do it again tomorrow. And she goes, but you've put me at ease. In other words, that I have found comfort here. And how long do you think it's been since she's found comfort anywhere? What a foreign idea that would have been for her. And she's, in this experience with Boaz, given her that ease. I mean, she was hoping to just scrape by, and she found so much more. You know, and I think about the time that we live in. I mean, how many people today are just kind of scraping by, who have financial challenges, emotional challenges? They're dealing with loss, despair, loneliness. Imagine if a person dealing with that, because the reality is that when we're dealing with those dark times is when we are most open to God. So imagine a person who was experiencing that walked by and just said, you know what? I'm just going to go in and see what happens. Imagine if they walked in and they experienced ease, even if just for an hour, that somehow they came through the door and they just felt more comfortable, more relaxed, even though things are unfamiliar. I think those sort of things are possible. But I mean, my prayer every day, sometimes I say it here at the pulpit, sometimes I say it on my own, is that when you're here, that you have a sense of ease. That in the time you have, that you can kind of set whatever your pain is, whatever your struggle is, you can set it down and have a sense of being free of that. And it's really kind of up to us as the church to kind of make that experience possible. Now, to be clear, like, you know, a deep sense of ease, a deep sense of comfort, a sense of freedom, those things, you know, really only come from God. That God gives us that deep sense of those things. But we still have a responsibility in it. That I would argue that, you know, if you're a disciple of Jesus, someone who's put your faith in Jesus, someone who says that Jesus is going to kind of guide me in how I interact with people, then it's your responsibility, as it's my responsibility, that we all have a responsibility to do what we can to foster the opportunity for that experience for someone. You know, and in doing this, there are kind of, you know, there are fundamental things that, of course, that we're always going to do, right? We're going to always do our best to be welcoming. We're going to be friendly. We're going to be kind to one another. Of course, we're going to do those things. You know, for my responsibilities, you know, I'm going to make sure I'm, you know, teaching accurately from the Word of God, that I'm going to share the gospel while we're here. You know, the music is meant to kind of center our hearts on all these experiences. But we have to remember that those things are our foundation. In other words, they're the things that we build on. But there's so much more to do to make the things better for people, to help people engage more deeply. And this is where we can really dig into Boaz and see that Boaz really shows us kind of how to treat a person, how to create an experience to help people feel more connected with one another. Because what Boaz really does for us is that he gives us a roadmap. In fact, one of the things he does is that after he's actually treated Ruth so well, he actually, when it gets to be kind of mealtime, he actually invites her to come eat with the rest of the crew. That would have been unimaginable. That would have been a sense of generosity, a sense of hospitality that anyone in Ruth's position would have never expected. Remember that she's really just hoping to scrape by. But what did she find in that? And it's not specific to a meal, but it was an opportunity, an experience to gather with another group of people who welcomed her and didn't look down on her. It didn't judge her for where she was in life. And in that moment, she found community. That after all the things she'd been through, she suddenly found community. And we know that in the time that we live in, a lack of community, a lack of relationships is actually one of the kind of biggest issues in the time we live in. You know, as I was kind of searching around and kind of doing research for this message, I came across a research study that was published by the Cigna group, so like the health insurance people, Cigna, that 3 out of 5 people have persistent loneliness in the United States, are persistently lonely. And it turns out that loneliness, an earlier study shows that loneliness is as bad for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It literally, because think about when you're lonely or upset, does it manifest physically? Of course it does. It actually does the same cardiovascular damage to your body as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That you actually are at increased likelihood of stroke, you're at increased likelihood of heart disease. It's actually more dangerous to your health than obesity is? Loneliness. And 3 out of 5 people are experiencing that. So what do we do? How do we kind of provide a solution? Well, this article kind of, it's talking about how we got to where we are, but it also points to how we can start to find our way back out of it. So this is from an Associated Press article. It says, research shows that Americans who have become less engaged with worship houses, community organizations, and even their own family members in recent decades have steadily reported an increase in feelings of loneliness. So the fact that people have withdrawn from everything, right, you know, community organizations, right, their family, but also church. So what it means is, I laughed when this idea occurred to me, was that going to church isn't just good for your soul. It's good for your body. It's like working out. It's like cardiovascular work. Come on, right? If it improves, it helps heart disease, it helps against stroke. So it's, you guys are working out right now, right? Kind of the lowest sweat workout you've had in a while, right? But you know, I joke about it. But if we think about what Jesus said, right? Jesus said, here's the 2 things I want my followers to hold on to, right? Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. Well, if just going someplace for an hour a week would reduce your chance of heart disease or stroke, would you do it? Well, if we love the people around us, we should create an environment that helps them to connect and feel comfortable being part of an experience that builds community by getting together an hour or so a week. But I kind of want to reinforce something that I mentioned earlier, that if you've been in church all of your life, for you, walking in the church is very comfortable. In fact, some folks have shared with me that when they walk in here, you know, they look at various things, the stained glass windows, the cross, whatever it might be, that actually seeing those things brings them comfort. But that's not true for everybody. And it's certainly not true for people who are not church people. The reality is that for people who are not familiar with a church experience, the traditional church experience could possibly be uncomfortable, but in most cases, it's probably not particularly comfortable. And so we have to think about that. So how do we kind of minimize the chance of that sort of thing happening? Well, this is where I think Boaz gives us some insight. Right? So as the narrative tells us that as Ruth heads back out to go to work, it tells us what Boaz does. It says, as Ruth got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. So here's a pop quiz. What's a sheave? There's an old song, right? Bringing in the sheaves. What are you bringing in? It's a bundled pack of grain, right? Wheat or another. And so what that is the sheaves are, the work's already been done, right? So they've gone out and done the harvest, they've broken them into groups, they've tied those groups together, and they've set them off to the side to either process them or transport them or store them or something. And what Boaz is saying, if she wanders over there and starts picking the wheat off of that, let her. Because remember that all of this is foreign to Ruth. The fact that she's even allowed to glean this field was not something she was even certain of. So it's very possible that she walks by and she goes, wow, this stuff's really easy to get. I'll get some of this. And Boaz says, if she does that, don't give her a hard time. In other words, don't get hung up on the rules. Don't get hung up on protocol. Don't get hung up on expectations. That she needs to have the freedom to make mistakes and not feel judged for it. Who doesn't need that freedom to make mistakes and not be judged for it? And whether it's true or not, people expect to feel judged when they walk into a church. They do. And so we have to work hard to overcome that. Right? So we actually set our minds towards prioritizing people's welcomeness or well-being and making them feel welcome. You know, and if somebody comes in dressed in something that you don't think is appropriate for church, don't worry about it. It's not your concern. It's not my concern. you know what? I'd rather have them wearing anything they want and be in the presence of God here connected with us. And someone comes in and talks in a way that you don't think they should be talking about in church, don't worry about it. I mean, you don't want to be, you know, there are limits, but in general, don't worry about it, right? The people need the freedom, right? You know, when I talk to some of the construction guys here, you know, things I haven't heard in a while, you know, as I'm talking to them, you know, and I'm not like, no, not here, you know, like they do good work. Let's run with it, right? Sort of thing, right? But what's more important than people feeling connected and welcome, right? That as they go on the journey with God, God will work all those things out. Let's not get them derailed before they even get started. You know, and Boaz kind of really shows us that even beyond prioritizing well-being, he goes a step further. He then tells his workers, even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her. He actually tells his workers that as you're working, accidentally drop some of what you picked up. To make sure she's walking along, it's easier. And what he's saying is that I'm going to use my resources to simplify the path of making life easier for her. That I'm going to go beyond just accommodating her, making her feel comfortable. I want to make her path easier. And that is our responsibility. That as disciples of Jesus Christ, if you put your faith in Jesus, your responsibility, as if it's my responsibility, is to make the path of people to find a growing life in Christ easy. So with all that in mind, remember the question I asked you at the beginning. Is there someone in your life that you wished would come to church or wished would be on a path in a growing relationship with God? Well, what I want again is to think about this idea is that are there things that we can address if we know what those reasons are? Can we construct a service that does that? Because if, you know, if there are reasonable things that we can achieve, let's plan to do that. Right? And for the people who don't see value in church, how do we help them see value in church? And the reality is that that's kind of really a personal thing. Like, there's not a lot I can stand up here to convince people the church is important. You know, it's not like as a church we can kind of put out a flyer that says church is important because A, B, and C. But what does connect with people are personal relationships, right? So be prepared to share why church is important to you. And when the opportunity presents itself, because it will probably will, be prepared with an answer, right? To know why it's important. And the one that just gets me is this reality that there are people who don't feel like they would be accepted here, that there are people who don't think they're wanted here. And we have to figure out how to make that known that all are welcome here. Because the responsibility is ours. Right? Remember what Jesus said, kind of his last command. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations. Jesus said, it's your responsibility, it's my responsibility. We're not just to wait and hope they come one day, right? We're not even supposed to just pray that they come one day. Yes, we should pray, but we should also get after it, get to work, go, do it. Look and see what it takes to make that kind of difference. Because Jesus wasn't looking for believers, he was looking for followers. He didn't pound this idea of believe me. You know what he said most often? Follow me. And so we're called to get to work, to help people to find a growing relationship with Christ. And just as God is patient with you as you make mistakes, and he's really patient with me because I make a lot of mistakes, he continues to walk with me. And that's our responsibility, to show up and be willing to walk with people, to help them develop that relationship. And not just, you know, to say, come on in and get started, but to walk through the process with them, to kind of live in it with them. That's what it means to be a disciple, that you're growing in Jesus yourself, but a big part of the way you're doing that is helping others to grow with him. So how do we start all this? Okay, I've thrown all this stuff at you. Well, what should we do to get started? Well, I have an idea. I want you, you can choose whether to take my challenge or not, to go ask somebody to come to church with you next week. Invite them, even if you've invited them before. I mean, don't hound them, right? But just ask them. Say, come on, you know, let's get together and go to church next week. And with any luck, I'll see twice as many people here next week. I'm realistic, that's probably not going to happen. But here's what we're going to do. If they tell you, I'm not going to go, or I can't go, or I don't want to go, because, take note of the reason. And then, send it to me. Like, seriously. Tell me the reason why they won't come. Not by name, just the reason. Like, I don't want an address or a phone number or anything, right? But tell me the reason they gave you. And I'll make a list. And then we can sit down and go, okay, what are some of the things that we can actually do to make a difference? I mean, the ones I hear all the time, and I certainly understand, is Sunday morning just doesn't work in the busy time that we live in. You know, you're taking part of your weekend, right? So another day, you know, I'm free Thursday nights, sort of thing. You know, we could do something then, right? So look for those answers and really, like, really try to find that. And if you're bold, ask a bunch of people, because the more we understand what the reasons are, the more we can realistically deal with it, right? Because the thing is that, you know, when I first returned to church, I remembered what it was like to not believe, to not think this stuff was important. But the reality is that the longer I spend in it, the harder it is for me to remember. I mean, I try my best to remember, but it's just not the same. So rather than guess why people don't want to come, let's ask them. Right? And actually use that as a way to really begin to become an effective part of helping people to find a healthier, fuller life in a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. So one last thing about Ruth before we finish up. So as Ruth has kind of gone out there and Boaz has been so kind to her, as she heads home to Naomi, Ruth is literally loaded down with food. The Bible says that she went home with an ephah full of food. How much is an ephah? Well, it turns out if you went to a Home Depot and you got the big orange bucket, it would be two of those filled. So she walked her home with grain, basically 2 5-gallon buckets. Remember, Naomi's hoping she's going to come home with enough scraps to survive the night. So you know, Naomi kind of notices. And she's like, "And whose field were you working in?" And she says, "Oh, there's some guy named Boaz. He was just super nice to me. He was really kind." And then suddenly, Naomi's like really excited. "You were in Boaz's field?" She says, "That man is a close relative. He's one of our guardian redeemers." What's a guardian redeemer? Come back next week, and I'll tell you what it is.